Case number 07-1401 et al. Consolidated Rail Corporation Petitioner versus Surface Transportation Board et al. Mr. Jenkins for Petitioner Conrail. Mr. Kahn for Petitioner 212 Marion. And Mr. Moltini for the respondents.
May it please the court, my name is Robert Jenkins. I am counsel for Consolidated Rail Corporation. With me at counsel table is Fritz Kahn, who is counsel for 212 Marin Boulevard and the other LLC property owners in this case. The court has allocated us each 7.5 minutes. I'd like to reserve 2.5 minutes of my time for rebuttal. This case involves a dismantled railroad right-of-way that Conrail has largely sold off to a variety of private and public property developers. After several decades of encouraging these sales, the City of Jersey City in 2006 claimed that the right-of-way was subject to the abandonment authority of the Surface Transportation Board. In 2007, the STB agreed with the city on the ground that the United States Railway Association in 1976 had transferred the property to Conrail as a line of railroad. The key issues before this court are, first, whether the STB erred in determining that USRA transferred the property to Conrail as a line of railroad and not as spur and yard track, and second, whether the STB had jurisdiction to interpret USRA's final system plan and conveyance orders.
Don't you want to deal with the issues in the opposite order?
Well, Your Honor, the reason we're dealing with them in this order is that we allocated the issues between Conrail and 212 Marin, so that 212 Marin devoted the bulk of its brief. We have adopted their argument. I'd like to make clear at the outset, though, Your Honor, that if this court finds that there's enough ambiguity in the record to allow more than one interpretation of the final system plan and the conveyance documents, then this case does belong before the special court. The special court has exclusive jurisdiction to interpret, clarify, or modify the final system plan and conveyance documents. Right. We've absolutely adopted
it. Hold. I thought the statute says it has exclusive jurisdiction over orders of the special court.
It's not just orders of the special court.
What's the language? Can you read it to me?
The language is in the addendum.
Just read the language of the jurisdictional statute.
The language reads that the original and exclusive jurisdiction of the special court shall include any action, whether filed by any interested person or initiated by the special court itself, to interpret, alter, amend, modify, or implement any of the orders entered by such court pursuant to Section 743B of this title in order to effectuate the purposes of this chapter or the goals of the final system plan.
That's right. It says any orders of this court. And Judge Friendly has an opinion, which unfortunately I don't have in front of me, which says it's therefore uncertain whether this really applies to documents or not, but that the court, the special court, will go on to consider those when the central function of the special court is at issue.
That's clear. That's absolutely the case, Your Honor.
But the statute itself does not give them exclusive jurisdiction over interpreting documents, only orders.
The statute itself says orders, but in every opinion of the special court, and there are half a dozen of them cited in 212 Marin's brief, And if you go and look at
the, I've read every one of them.
That's not the question.
They say that if Judge Friendly says, if we had to look at every single one of these things, we would be here forever. And so we only look at the ones which affect the central function. So what makes this a central function?
It makes it a central function because it involves an interpretation of the FSP designations. And I would say that the FSP designations were clearly part of what the special court ordered. They ordered the adoption of the FSP designations.
But what part of those FSP designations said that only the things listed as line code are lines and everything else can be abandoned as spurs?
The FSP designations distinguish between lines,
yes,
and ancillary property. And there's a host of descriptions of the ancillary property that would accompany the lines. And after the description of the line codes and the lines, they describe the yards, the supporting structure, and the other property that, if not otherwise designated, would accompany if connected to those lines. This property was connected to the line, and it was included on the valuation maps that were attached to the deeds. But no one claims that all of the yard and spur and sidetrack property that was connected to the line that was transferred is therefore property that can't be abandoned. The STB doesn't claim that. No one claims that.
Is there something in one of the orders of the special court that says where some attached document uses the phrase line code, those are the only parts that are to be continued as lines?
Your Honor, I don't believe that any particular order of the special court says that. There are clearly decisions, including decisions of the Surface Transportation Board, that says that if lines were not designated, then they could be abandoned at the will of the railroad. I don't believe that there is any particular order other than the order adopting the final system itself.
Let me ask you this: When USRA came up with its final system plan of which properties would be transferred to Conrail, did that plan only include lines of railroad?
It included lines of railroad.
I mean, I thought that the auxiliary stuff just transferred automatically. Wasn't an issue.
The auxiliary properties transferred if they were associated with a line of railroad
So the final system plan identifies lines of railroad, correct?
It identifies lines of railroad, correct.
Right.
Now, as it turns out, in the case of the Harsimus Code Yard, the final system plan does note that only part of the Harsimus Cove yard was being transferred because a good part of it had been sold off or was being retained by the trustees of the Penn Central. So there is specific reference to the Harsimus Cove yard, but that's the only specific reference to any of the ancillary property that went along with line code 1420.
So your theory is that if it was covered in the final system plan and approved by the three judge district court, then interpreting that is something only that court can do, not the Surface Transportation Board, right?
Yes, if there's a question. I mean, normally there's not a question.
Yeah, no, normally people don't debate this, right? I understand that.
Yeah.
Now suppose, for example, that we agreed with you about that. What do we do then? What do we do? It should have been in the district court, right?
I would argue that you should remand it back to the STB with instructions to refer this question to the special court.
Is that the way it happens?
Well, STD does
the referral, or do people file suits in the district court?
The people do file suits in district court, and that, in fact, is the way that Conrail has usually done it. There is a case, it's Conrail versus Pittsburgh and Lake Erie, where Conrail filed in the district court, and PNLE filed before the ICC, and the ICC entered an appearance before the district court when Conrail asked the ICC's proceedings to be stayed. And the ICC entered an appearance in the district court to argue that its proceedings should not be stayed. However, as the court pointed out, the ICC helpfully said to Conrail, if you will file a motion to stay with us, we will grant it, because we agree that this ought to be decided by the special court. The special court went out of its way to say that was helpful, but they wanted to be clear that if the ICC hadn't done that, they would have ordered the ICC proceedings stayed.
You argue in your brief, and I assume that's why you have all your maps here, that this was used by Conrail as a spur track, right?
Yes.
But that's irrelevant if we agree with you on the jurisdictional question, correct?
It is irrelevant unless you want to entertain the argument that the suggestion that is only made in the reply brief by the STB here that somehow Conrail used it as a line of railroad and turned it back into, you know, mainline track. We believe that that's a pure post hoc rationalization of counsel. We don't think that the STB decided that below, and so we do think it's irrelevant.
Can I just ask about that, though, on the jurisdictional point, not on the merits point? And therefore I'm asking to counter-assume something that you don't want to assume. Assuming that we did read the STB's decision as saying that it was used as a line after the conveyance, as to that question, and therefore can't be abandoned without approval of the STB, as to that question, we do have jurisdiction, right? In other words, even if it was conveyed as a spur, if it were used as a line, the question of whether it could then again be abandoned is within our jurisdiction.
Yes.
Okay. Let me ask one.
But not the other way around, right?
But not the other way around.
Okay.
Wait, what's the other way around?
The other way around is, I assume that if it had been conveyed as a line of railroad, correct?
Yeah.
The fact that Conrail used it as a spur wouldn't...
Without approval.
Without approval, right?
That's also correct, Judge.
Okay, fine.
Let me, just on one more on the jurisdictional question. So the successor to the special court is the United States District Court for the District of Columbia, correct? Whose decisions we review.
Yes.
Right. What if, again, counter from your interest, but what if we thought that the STB's view of the line code was correct, that it was the correct interpretation, so that if we were to send this back to the district court and the district court decided your way and we would have to reverse because we would review that again, what would be the point of sending it back, or would there be a point in sending it back?
Your Honor, I think that when the statute says that the special court has exclusive jurisdiction, it means it. I don't believe that the Court of Appeals could predetermine that issue. I suppose that if you thought that it was so clear on the facts that there was no room for interpretation, that you could take the position that there was no point in referring it.
Well, when there was a special court and appeals were directly to the Supreme Court, did the Supreme Court not have the power to reverse the decision of the special court? Did it have to defer to the special court's interpretation?
I do not believe that even the Supreme Court had jurisdiction to overturn the special court. No court could review the special court when it was a special court.
Well, there were Supreme Court. There was a Supreme Court opinion reviewing.
There was a Supreme
claim,
Court,
right?
Excuse me.
Wasn't there a Supreme Court review of one of the special court decisions?
I'm not aware of it, Your Honor. There may.
Okay. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Your Honor, my time's up. I'll reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. Mr. Kahn?
May it please the court, I'm Fritz Kahn. I represent the petitioners at 212 Marin Boulevard, LLC et al. We deem the decisions of the Surface Transportation Board to be arbitrary and capricious, and its findings and conclusions not supported by substantial evidence considering the entire record. The very point, Judge Garland, that you raised earlier, and that about the jurisdiction of the special court. First of all, I read the Regional Rail Reorganization Act as amended by the Railroad Revitalization and Regulatory Reform Act as requiring orders.
Speak more into the microphone. I'm having
orders of the special court to actually convey the properties to Conrail. The sequence was the USRA would designate the property, and then the court would order its conveyance to Conrail. And we said in our pleadings before the Surface Transportation Board that the Surface Transportation Board was usurping the functions of the special court. In its brief, the Surface Transportation Board came up with the argument that Section 719E2, the applicable provision, relates only to disputes invoking the special court's central function. Now, I haven't read a single a special court case in which it did not deem its interpretation of its orders to invoke its central functions. And the commission, the board in its brief cited not a case. But the interesting part is that you read the decisions of the Surface Transportation Board, you won't find Section 719E2 cited. You won't even find the name of the special court mentioned. And that is typical of the way the board acted in this proceeding. It simply rejected anything that was contrary to its conclusion that the Sixth Street embankment extended from milepost 1.3 at Henderson Avenue on the east to milepost 2.5 at Waldo Avenue on the west, and that the Sixth Street embankment was included as part of the line code 1420 line, which was designated by the USRA in the final system plan and ordered by the special court to be operated as a line of railroad by Conrail.
When did you first raise the jurisdictional issue?
Sir?
When did you first raise the jurisdictional issue with the STB?
In our petition for reconsideration, but the board did not suggest that we were out of time. It didn't raise the topic.
I understand that, but did you wait until you knew you had a negative decision before you raised it?
Well, we thought the matter was very simple. The properties that my client purchased extended from milepost.
Right, but you thought it was simple, but they thought it was simple, but the other way.
Sir?
The other side also thought it was simple, only in the other direction. Did you wait to make a jurisdictional argument until after you learned that the STB would go against you?
Yes, we obviously didn't raise the jurisdictional point until our petition for reconsideration. You're quite right. But the board did not find fault with us, did not say we were raising the point out of time. The board didn't even raise the issue, didn't discuss it, just ignored it. It ignored the evidence.
In response to your petition for rehearing, it did deal with the issue, didn't it? It actually rejected your jurisdictional argument, didn't it?
No, it didn't cite Section 719E2. It didn't mention the special court. It said all we're doing here is exercising our powers to abandon a railroad line. It ignored every bit of evidence that was introduced in this case that was contrary to the board's conclusion. We submitted the testimony of some 5 highly respected, knowledgeable individuals. And the board doesn't so much as mention their names, much less even refer in the most abbreviated way to the testimony they offered. There was evidence introduced in this case that the line that was intended to be conveyed by the USRA was the main line of the United New Jersey Railroad and Canal Company from Newark to Jersey City.
What do you do with the deed itself, which says that such line originates at Hersimus Cove? Did the main line originate at Hersimus Cove?
No, sir. The main line of the United New Jersey Railroad and Canal Company ran from Newark to Jersey City.
Yeah, but the deed that we're talking about, which I understand is the one that's identified as line code 1420, it's your JA-914, it describes such line as it originates in the county at Hersimus Cove. It's the embankment that originates at Hersimus Cove.
We respectfully submit, Your Honor, that that refers to the ancillary property. That's one of the...
Let me see. I just want to be sure I understand. So you agree that the embankment is what originates at Hersimus Cove?
The embankment is actually short of the Hersimus Cove, but it's part of the Hersimus branch.
I don't understand what you do with the document at JA-914, which says, describes a line of railroad known as the Penn Central Hersimus branch. Such line originates in the county at Hersimus Cove, passes through Journal Square, terminates in the county near the junction with the Penn Central, west of the New Jersey Turnpike, and then said the line of railroad described herein is identified as line code 1420.
Well, we respectfully submit that refers to ancillary track as well as the main line.
Well, let me just go step by step. This is certainly the key document, right? This is the document that... You would agree that if the embankment is part of line code 1420...
I don't agree with that.
I understand. I said if. You would agree that if it were, then you would have a problem in this case, right? If the embankment were line code 1420, you would agree it was conveyed as a line.
Yes, sir.
All right. So now we have to figure out what is line code 1420, right?
Yes, sir.
All right. So what is your answer to the argument that this deed, which says such line code originates in the county at Hersimus Cove, that the only thing that matches that description is the embankment? What is your answer to that?
I repeat, Your Honor, that refers to ancillary track. How was the Waldo Yard conveyed?
What words in this deed should make us think that this refers to ancillary track?
You can't find it as spelled out, but certainly we offer testimony.
So the documents do not support your position, is that what you're saying?
That's correct, but the special court, and that's why we think the board should have denied the petition for a declaratory order and allowed the parties to submit the issues to the special court.
Sort of on a parole evidence theory.
Sir?
Parole evidence theory, that the documents aren't enough to resolve this. But why doesn't this document on its face indicate that the embankment is the line?
Your Honor, let me...
What's vague about this document?
Let me explain to you how I arrived at recommending that we participate in the declaratory order proceeding. The properties that my client purchased extended from line post 0.18 west of Division Street, between Waldo Avenue and Division Street, and terminated at line post 0.88 at Henderson Street. That's from 0.18 to 0.88. Now, how in the world can that be part of a line that goes from milepost 1 in Jersey City to milepost 7 in Harrison? It cannot be.
Can I ask you, following up on Judge Garland's question, where Harsimus Cove is? I thought there was a map in here that shows Harsimus Cove itself as between the embankment track and the main line. In other words, that whole sort of pie-shaped, or maybe not the whole thing, but that property is Harsimus Cove. And then Harsimus Cove Yard is at the north end of it, and Exchange Place is at the south end of it, of yeah, Harsimus Cove.
You're correct, Your Honor. The line ran into the Harsimus Cove yard area.
But the description in the deed of the line originating at Harsimus Cove, I think, is ambiguous, because Harsimus Cove is the area, according to one map, between the embankment track and the main line.
And certainly the maps show that much of that territory had been sold off,
right,
and was not conveyed, right, to Conrail.
And what do you say to the argument that the other line, the main line, had already been abandoned by the time in the 70s of the conveyance?
Absolutely false.
False.
Absolutely false. And at best, a small segment at the tail end of the United New Jersey Railroad Canal Company's main line at Exchange Place was sold off below Brunswick,
right,
Street.
But
and interestingly, Your Honor, the board's decision does not identify by milepost what portion was sold off.
Right, but it does indicate that the area between Brunswick and Exchange Place had been abandoned.
Yes.
Is that false?
But you could say the same thing, Your Honor, about the Harsimus Branch. The board is very cute in saying, well, no one asks us to identify what happened between milepost 1 and milepost 1.3, and we're not going to address that issue. But that section had been largely sold off as well.
Let me just focus on this one part for one moment. So if the area between Brunswick, area east of Brunswick, had been sold off.
Yes, Your Honor.
There, Harsimus Cove doesn't begin until considerably after Brunswick. Is that right?
Sir?
Harsimus Cove, the area that we've been talking about, Harsimus Cove. What street does that begin at?
No, the line runs all the way through the Harsimus Cove Yard area.
That's the embankment part that runs through Harsimus Cove.
That's the Harsimus Branch.
That does run all. But what about the other branch, the branch that you're saying is the actual line? That would be the lower branch, right?
That ran from milepost 1 in Jersey City,
yes,
to milepost 7 in Harrison.
Right, but I guess what I'm saying is the deed describes it as something that begins, originates in the county at Harrison, getting the pronunciation, I'm having difficulty, Harsimus Cove. But by the time of the deed, this lower branch did not extend to Harsimus Cove at all. Is that right? It stopped at Brunswick.
There's two different lines. And the main line is the one that ran on Railroad Avenue down to Exchange Place.
Yes. Now, did that one continue? I understood the STB to be saying that that stopped at Brunswick as of the 1978.
But there's no way to get from Brunswick over to the Harsman's Cove.
Right. So that couldn't be the line. I understood the STB's argument, therefore, to be that could not be the line that originated at Harsman's Cove because it didn't extend to Harsman's Cove as of the time of this deed.
That's what the answer should have been.
Judge Tatel? No. All right, your time is up.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Multani? Can I ask you one question before you get started and we get lost in all this?
Yes, Judge.
And I couldn't find an answer to this. Is there any reg or anything that says that the yardmaster's jurisdiction encompasses the yard? I mean, stop. In other words, he has jurisdiction over every part of the yard. Is there anything that describes the yardmaster's jurisdiction? Any reg?
Not that I'm aware of in the record, Judge. Right. May it please the Court, I'm Ronald Multani on behalf of the Surface Transportation Board and the United States of America. And if I was prepared to discuss the jurisdictional issue second, but if it seems as though the Court's more interested in that, I can start with that discussion. The jurisdictional issue was raised by 212 Marin after it had received an adverse decision from the Board. And if this case were about whether or not the embankment had been conveyed to Conrail, I think that would be the type of issue that would fit within the exclusive jurisdiction of the court under the 3R Act. But the special court's jurisdiction doesn't apply to all actions that relate to Conrail conveyed property. And the special court itself said that the notion that there's complete immunity for Conrail conveyed property from ICC regulation is, quote, unacceptable as a matter of both language and good sense.
Yeah, but that's not the argument they're making.
No.
Right? Nobody's making that argument.
The
only question is who has jurisdiction to decide what USRA intended when it conveyed this property, correct? That's the only question. It's not whether the property is exempt from surfboard regulation.
Well, I think their jurisdictional argument is that only the special court has that exclusive jurisdiction
to make that judgment, right?
Judge.
Right. That's their argument, that this relates to an order of the special court interpreting an order of the special court, and that under 719, that's within the exclusive jurisdiction of the special court.
Your Honor, all the cases that relate that the special court's decision relating to its exclusive jurisdiction talk about its jurisdictions falling within the central functions, and all those cases relate to whether the central function cases relate to whether a piece of property or some form of property, whether it's lease rights or overhead trackage rights or a liability like CERCLA or the obligation to take care of the bridge in Philadelphia, was transferred or was not transferred to Conrail.
Well, isn't that the question?
Conrail.
The question here is whether this particular line was transferred as a line of railroad or not. What was USRA's intent? It was part of the FSP, correct?
Correct. Yes, Your Honor. And that's why the board decided this, and that's why the board has.
Are there any cases where the Surface Transportation Board resolves an issue like this where it's not contested? I mean, where it is contested?
I'm not sure what you mean by an issue like this
where the question is what was the character of the line that was transferred as part of the FSP, the final system plan, whether it was a line of railroad.
To my knowledge, this is the only case that's like that. I mean, there are other cases, for example, the High Line case in New York City.
Right, but there wasn't a debate about it. Everybody agreed.
And
right here. Here it's debated, and I was asking you, the reason I ask you is you say in your brief that, you know, if we ruled that this fell within the exclusive jurisdiction of the successor to the special court, it would be a terrible situation, right? But we looked. We couldn't find any case up until this one where this Surface Transportation Board had resolved an issue like this on its own where it was controverted. Am I right about that?
I think you're correct, Judge. I think this is...
There isn't one, right?
I think that's correct. And the fact of the matter is...
So then what's your argument that this is not... that this is not an interpretation of an order entered by such court? It's pursuant to 743, right?
Yes.
In order to affect the purposes of this chapter or the goals of the final system plan. Isn't that what we're interpreting here? We're interpreting that order. What did USRA intend when this line of railroad was transferred?
Your Honor, if the court were to take the word interpretation that far, it would be a little bit like sort of the ERISA preemption challenges or any of those preemption cases where you talk about relates to, where there's no logical end to relates to. And I think
But interpretation is totally different. We are interpreting it, and in fact, that's exactly the decision of the board here actually did that, right? It looked at the deeds, it looked at the plan, and it interpreted this as a line of railroad.
The board looked at the nature of what the special court conveyed to Conrail.
Correct, and that exactly that's my point.
I don't think there's any doubt about that.
That order.
If you want to use the term interprets for the order,
but that's not a difficult word. Interpret. I mean, I don't know. Interprets not like relates to. Interpret. We use that word all. How could this not be interpreting it?
The board took the order at face value, and there actually isn't any language pertaining to the order that's I think at issue here. What the board was looking at was, what did the FSP
look? It says, here's what the board says. It says the issue before us here is whether the embankment was transferred to Conrail as a line of railroad.
Yes, sir.
Included on line code 1420. Okay? And then it looks at the deed, looks at all these agreements, all these other documents, right?
It does.
And it reaches a conclusion that the embankment was transferred as a line of railroad. That sounds to me like it was interpreting the order approving the transfer of the lines covered by the final system plan. Right? It was.
Certainly looking at the final system plan and taking that at face value, Your Honor.
Taking what at face value?
That's the final system plan and the conveyance and the deed.
Right.
But that's something that the board ordinarily does in determining.
You just told me when I asked you the question that there is no case where the board has ever done this where it's contested.
And I don't think I'm.
That's what I asked.
Backtracking on that, Judge.
Well, can you cite one then?
No, sir.
Okay. Well, we looked and couldn't find one.
Point I wanted to make about the jurisdiction of the special court. The special court invokes its exclusive jurisdiction for the central function cases. And if you look at the common thread with all those central function cases, Your Honor, that common thread where it invokes its exclusive jurisdiction is where there's an issue about whether a property or a liability was or was not conveyed to Conrail. And this is different because there's no issue in this case about whether the embankment was or was not conveyed to Conrail. Everybody agrees that the embankment was conveyed to Conrail. And so what the board did when it was presented, when the parties asked the board to look at this issue, was take a look at this as if it was requested to review the abandonment authorization requirement here. And that depends, of course, on whether the property was line or spur. And that's a fairly routine function of the board to determine whether a piece of property is line or spur. And that's why the board was looking at the nature of the conveyance.
Can I ask about the original conveyance in the special court's order? If this embankment were not included within line code 1420, say the embankment had previously been used as a line, but say there was some deed which made absolutely clear that the embankment is not part of 1420, that would change it from that conveyance by USRA would have changed it from a line to a spur? Would that be the consequence?
If it were clear that the embankment was not a line?
No. Imagine the embankment was, as the STB says, historically had been part of the line.
Yes.
Not ancillary. It had been part of the line. Okay?
Okay.
But imagine that we were to decide that this line code 1420 does not include the embankment. What would be the consequence of that decision? Would that mean the embankment is therefore spur and has essentially has been ordered to have changed its function?
I guess it depends on whether you were deciding whether the embankment had been conveyed to Conrail or not. I think if you were deciding by saying that it had not been conveyed to Conrail.
There doesn't seem to be any dispute that it was conveyed to Conrail, right?
Yes, Judge.
Everybody agrees it was conveyed either as a line or as ancillary, right? Is there some separate document that says everything else other than these line codes is also conveyed?
The final system plan
conveyed
used and useful property.
Okay. So I'm just trying to figure out what implicit in this argument of your opponents, and I'm trying to figure out whether you agree with the underlying assumption, is that if it's not within 1420, even if the day before it had been used as a line, Conrail no longer had to use it as a line. Is that, do you agree with that assumption, that underlying point?
If it had not been a line.
No, if it had been used as a line. In other words, if both the upper branch and the lower branch were used for through traffic.
Yes, sir.
Okay. But the meaning of this phrase, line code 1420, between 1.0 and 7.0, if the meaning of that did not include the upper branch, what would that leave the upper branch as?
I think it would lead it as ancillary track.
It would. So it could, this order with the document attached could change the function of that.
I think that's right, Your Honor, and which is why the board talked about the fact that the nature of the conveyance had to be, this had to be the line code 1420 that's cited in the final system plan, because the lower branch, if you imagine the Harshness branch as a Y, the lower branch had already been sold off, and the board knows that from the 1961 United New Jersey Rail and Canal Company abandonments that are cited in the board's order. And it was that simple. And so the board looked at that and said, well, this has to be the line of rail taking the final system plan, the deeds, the track charts, all at face value. And from there it looked at, to determine line or spur, how Conrail used it.
Now, what about the question that Judge Henderson asked, which is that did Harsimus Cove actually extend between the upper branch and the lower branch? And therefore, if that were correct, that would make the deed not particularly helpful in your argument.
I think that map doesn't necessarily. If I'm envisioning the same map that Judge Henderson was talking about.
Envisioning, since I thought you guys were going to show us a bunch of maps today. Guess not.
Well, I think of the Harsimus, the embankment, as ending at Henderson Street, which is, I think, where the Harsimus Cove begins, the embankment property. And that's how I view the Harsimus Cove. So the...
No, go ahead.
I was going to talk about the interrupt board.
This fascinating discussion. I want to switch to a different subject.
Can I ask you a question about, and this is very oversimplified, but is it your position that the reason the special court does not have jurisdiction is whether or not it conveyed a line of railroad, it doesn't care because it did, nobody disputes it, it conveyed all of this. The mainline tracks, the embankment track, that is the portion that hadn't already been sold. In other words, it's only the STB that cares whether it was conveyed as a line of rail because the abandonment issue comes in. But if we said it, let's say we said this belongs to the special court, the special court isn't going to decide, obviously, anything other than this is what we conveyed, and this is what we consider to be the line of rail, but they're not concerned. If they conveyed, if there's no dispute about what they conveyed, that is the amount of what they conveyed, then it's irrelevant to that court whether it's a line of rail or not, because they have nothing to do with abandonment.
Your Honor, I think that's correct, but let me start out with the premise. It's not the board's position that the special court wouldn't have jurisdiction. It's the board's position that this isn't one of the type of cases where the special court has exclusive jurisdiction.
Give me an example of one that does.
Well,
give me an example of a case where the board would have exclusive jurisdiction.
I'm not sure that there's any case related where the board would have exclusive jurisdiction that carves out, it's different from the special
court. I don't mean the board. I mean the three-judge court.
Well, where the court has exclusive jurisdiction?
Yeah.
Well, you can look at any of the cases that are cited, the central function cases, where there's the conveyance of the tugboats. Oh, I'm interrupting you, Judge. I'm sorry.
That's okay. So in any situation where the question is whether track was conveyed as a line of railroad or not, that's not a case that falls within the central function, within the exclusive jurisdiction of the...
Yes, within the exclusive jurisdiction. Not to say that the special court couldn't entertain those kind of cases. If they wanted to handle one of the 11,000 Conrail abandonments, it probably would fall within their jurisdiction. It's not one of the central function
cases. How does the special court have authority to... Right. Imagine we were to send this all back, the special court were to look at it, they were to say, understand there is no special court anymore, but they were to say that the district court were to say this... you, the STB, were right? The embankment is part of this line code. The special court would not have authority to decide whether abandonment is approved or not approved, would it? Isn't that only up to the STB?
Well, I think this by statute, the STB has that authority by 45 U.S.C. 744G.
Does the special court have that authority?
You know, the 744G... doesn't say that it does, so perhaps I overstated the jurisdiction of the special court.
I don't think the special court was given the authority for all post-conveyance decisions about abandonment. I mean, is there any basis for believing that?
I think you've corrected me, Your Honor.
So let me just get back to the use argument that we've talked about a little bit before. The STB says that after acquiring the line, Conrail operated over the embankment to move substantial amounts of traffic to serve shippers located on Hudson Street. Thus, this track was not used as ancillary track.
Yes, sir.
Let me just see if I understand the STB's understanding of the law. Imagine you are wrong with respect to what was in the line code. Imagine that the upper branch was in fact conveyed as ancillary, but that Conrail used it as a through line. Does that mean... thereafter, Conrail could not abandon it without approval?
It's my understanding that if a railroad uses what was ancillary track as a through line, that then it would require, that it becomes a line of railroad, and it would require abandonment authority after that point.
Right, and there's no doubt that only the STB has jurisdiction over that issue.
Yes, sir.
That's the argument the interveners make that you're just talking about.
Yes.
But you didn't embrace that in your brief. At least I didn't find it.
We talked about the Nicholson and the use test in our brief, and we talked.
Did you embrace the argument that another way to affirm here what the board did was that regardless of how it was originally transferred, it's been used as a auxiliary track. As a line of railroad.
Not to that detail in the format that Judge Garland asked the question, but the board did find that it had been used to serve the shippers, and there's no shipper on the embankment. So
in your brief here, do you argue that that's a basis for affirming here?
I'm sorry.
I thought your brief here was arguing that the surf board did not that the board's decision that this was transferred as a line of railroad, right? Originally,
yes.
That
we know what's on everybody's mind.
Yeah, exactly.
The board found it to be transferred as
the line of railroad.
This was line code 1420.
Yeah. And that's why you think we should affirm. I didn't see you arguing in your brief that we should affirm because regardless of how it was transferred, it was used as a line of railroad.
Your Honor, there is a section in our brief that talks about it, and it starts with the headline, "This property was used as a line of railroad both before and after Conrail acquired it." Uh-huh. And it talks about the embankment and the shippers that were served and how the there was no shipper on the embankment itself. So to get to the shippers that Conrail served with the over 3,200 cars of traffic, the traffic had to go through that. And so the brief talks about the Nicholson use test and the distinction between spur and line based on through versus just switching and offloading and whatnot.
We have a section at the end of the brief that says this property was used as a railroad line both before and after Conrail acquired.
Yes.
Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, that's what I'm talking about. I'm out of time. If the bench doesn't have any more questions for me.
No, I'm done. No, thank you.
I respectfully ask that the petitions be denied. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's see. Mr. Jenkins. All right, why don't you take 2 minutes?
Thank you, Your Honor. Very quickly, first of all, in response to the last matter that was being discussed, that is the headline in their brief, but you will find nothing in the text of their argument there that suggests that the STB or even counsel here found anything in the record to suggest that this was used for anything other than switching. The only thing that they say in their brief is that the amount of traffic handled there was not trivial.
Well, let me just read from the STB's opinion. What do you say about the sentence that I was quoting before? After acquiring the line, Conrail operated over the embankment to move substantial amount of traffic to shippers located on Hudson Street. Thus, this track was not used as ancillary track.
First of all, we think that that's a reference. We're not clear to whether that's a reference to Conrail's use of it as ancillary track or Penn Central's use of it. The prior sentence talks about Penn Central's use. It doesn't. There's no discussion there of whether Conrail used it for switching. A substantial amount of traffic says nothing. If you go back and look at the court's Nicholson case.
The next sentence, which says, thus, the track was not used as ancillary track.
It's not clear to me.
I understand the word ancillary. That would include switching, right?
That would include switching, Your Honor.
When they say was not used as ancillary track.
It's not clear to me that they're even referring to Conrail's use there.
Well, it says was not used. That sounds pretty expansive. It sounds like at all.
If you look at the beginning of that paragraph, it's all about Penn Central's use. Then they have the one line about Conrail using it for substantial traffic. Then they have that sentence, and then they say in any event.
So that all fits exactly the argument in the red brief that it was used both before and after Conrail acquired it.
That's the argument in the brief, Your Honor. If you look at both of the decisions, look at the beginning of the discussion in the decision at JA8, The decision begins by saying that the issue here is whether or not this was transferred as a line of track. If you go to that's on page JA8. If you go to the conclusion at JA10, in sum we conclude.
I understand that, but then they say, starting at page 10, which appears to be a new argument, they start with the signaling word, moreover, Conrail's position that the embankment is merely ancillary track ignores the fact that it was operated for over 100 years, and then goes on.
And we don't ignore that, Your Honor. We say that that's irrelevant. How Penn Central used it is irrelevant.
But you agree that it's not irrelevant if you used it. Is that correct?
If we had in fact used it as a line of railroad, it would not be irrelevant. We do not believe. Certainly this thin one sentence would be arbitrary and capricious if this court found that that's what the STB found, because there is no evidence in the record. All of the evidence in the record, and I'll refer you to JA816, and I'll refer you to JA773, which is where Ryan and Hasselman testified that it was used only as switching track. And in answer to Judge Henderson's question earlier, I would also, on the issue of whether or not the track was used as whether the yardmaster's jurisdiction extend. Mr. Hand's verified statement specifically talks about that and says that the yardmaster had control of that track. It was yard track.
I know he said that. I was just wondering if there was any statutory or rule that designated his jurisdiction as stopping it.
You're right. There's not a statutory rule. Quickly, too, in this question of where Harsimus Cove is.
Yeah. Got a map. Excellent.
Maps. if you look at JA 926, which is the main line, this is V2.1 ST1, and then you look at JA 933, which is V1.01 ST2. I put these on boards.
Which is the one that has the words Harsimus Cove on it?
The term Harsimus Cove, as far as I understand it, doesn't necessarily appear on either of these, but this entire area with the piers extends, is Harsimus Cove. And if you look at...
How do I know that other than, I mean, my Google map doesn't show that. How do I know that?
Well, you know that, Your Honor, because...
There is a yard, right? There's a Harsimus Cove yard.
Yes, there's a Harsimus Cove yard, and that's
that one is next to the upper branch.
Yes, that's what's largely shown on JA 933, is the yard. And you'll see at the bottom of JA 933, it says continued on map ST1, and that is the beginning of what we call line code 1420, the main line. That is immediately adjacent and also has docks. It's all part of Harsimus Cove. We think that this distinction between Harsimus Cove, where Exchange Place was in relation to the docks is a distinction without a difference. Finally, Your Honor, question of whether or not the main line had already been abandoned, and accordingly, this was something that the STB came up with on its own in its decision. The fact of the matter is that all of this track was part of line code 1420, the main line and the ancillary track. And they included all of the main line track in the valuation maps that were attached to the deed, whether it had been sold off or not.
Wait, now I'm a little confused. You're saying that the deed that refers to line code 1420 includes both branches?
It does include, because it included all the ancillary track, Your Honor.
Well, if that's true, then there's nothing about the conveyance order itself that decides this question.
The conveyance order itself says it went from milepost 1 to milepost 7. There was only one line that ever went from milepost 1 to milepost 7, and that was the main line. It was the UNJRCC main line. The ancillary track, the Harsimus Cove, the Harsimus branch, the old Harsimus branch went from milepost 00 eastward to 1.47. The only line that went from the Hudson River, milepost 1, to milepost 7 was the main line. And the fact that part of it had been sold off did not mean that that's not what they intended to convey. Thank you.
The case is submitted. We'll take a short break.